David Gilbert is serving his 40th year of a life sentence. His only pathways to freedom are a governor's clemency or passage of the proposed elder parole bill. To support his campaign for clemency, go to friendsofdavidgilbert.org. To reach Jerome Wright or learn more about the campaign to halt solitary confinement, go to nycaic.org. That's the New York Campaign for Alternatives to Isolated Confinement. To get involved with elder parole and other decarceration campaigns, Jerome recommends two organizations, Releasing Aging People in Prison at rappcampaign.com and Justice Roadmap at justiceroadmapny.org. For Pacifica, I'm Ken Yale.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Hey KBOO listeners, want a chance to win a $500 shopping spree to Pals Books while also supporting your favorite community radio station? When you support KBOO on GiveGuide today with a donation of $10 or more, you'll get a chance to win a $500 shopping spree to Pals Books. And if you're younger than 36, you'll have twice the chance of winning when GiveGuide gives away a second Pals shopping spree to one donor 35 and under. For a chance to win the Pals shopping spree, donations must be made today only. So donate to KBOO on GiveGuide right now at kboo.fm/give. Again, that's kboo.fm/give.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Salem Progressive Film Series presentation of Holding the Thin Green Line. This documentary slideshow tells the stories of people fighting to save the souls of their communities and preserve the integrity of the Pacific Northwest as they fight to stop the world's largest methanol refinery from being built in Conemaugh, Washington, and a massive LNG facility in Tacoma. From December 6th to the 11th, the slideshow can be viewed at your own convenience at kboo.fm/greenline. Then on December 11th from 5 to 6 p.m., we'll hold a live Q&A session with activists who are featured in the documentary. Again, that's Holding the Thin Green Line documentary slideshow screening, December 6th to the 11th, and a live Zoom Q&A on December 11th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to a CD called Generations. It's a collection of Aleutic songs and stories gathered by the Aleutic Museum in Kodiak, Alaska. This song is called Release Me, Carl. You can find out more about it and the CD at aleuticmuseum.org. Today I present selections from the Storyteller series. They're Alaska Native folktales revived from the audio archives of KNBA radio station and also one from the Anchorage Museum in Anchorage, Alaska. There are also new stories from today's Alaska Native culture bearers. The stories I'm about to feature provide cultural memories and lessons of everyday life, and many deal with subsistence culture in Alaska. The Storyteller series is distributed by Native Voice One and hosted by Janar. The first one is an Athabascan story of Denali, narrated by the late Patricia Wade, who is Athabascan. The story is from the archives of the Anchorage Museum, and it's about the creation of how Denali came to be.
Kidakekunkwa. Welcome. You are listening to The Storyteller, a collection of stories and folktales from Alaska's original peoples. I'm your host, Shanach. Let's go. In this episode, we hear why we call the land Denali.
In a populous settlement, there lived a rich youth and his four nephews. Far away across the sea, there lived a very desirable young girl, but who did not care for men, and this girl he desired to marry. This young man began to think with himself, "If I were to go and propose in my turn, perhaps she would accept me." And he started, his four nephews accompanying him in their own canoes. They arrived, and he said to her, "I have come across the water in order to take you to wife." But she answered, "I will not marry you." And so, the next morning they made ready to start back. Many people had come out of their houses to see them going, and were standing in a crowd on top of the high bank. Among them there stood a woman carrying her young child on her arm. This woman then, talking to her baby, said, "And what of this little girl? If they want a girl, why not take this little one of mine?" The young man, on hearing it, held out his paddle toward the woman and said, "Put her upon this, the little one you speak of." And the woman did so. The young man placed the child behind him in the canoe, and off he paddled, his nephews following him. Meanwhile, the girl whom he had intended to marry came down to get water. But as she stepped on the soft mud at the water's edge, she began to sink down into it. "Oh, oh," she cried, "here I am sinking up to my knees." The young man retorted, "It is your own fault." By this time she had sunk up to her neck. "Oh, oh," said she, "I am up to my neck." Again he replied, "It is your own fault." And she disappeared, being dragged down under the ground. "Let it be so," thought he. But the girl's mother had some tame brown bears, and seeing what had happened, she took them down to the bank, to the water, and laying hold of their tails, she said to them, "Raise a strong wind," hoping that the young man might get drowned. The bears began to dig the bottom in a fury and made huge waves. At the same time, the water rose exceedingly, but the young man pulled out a thin white stone which he was carrying with him and threw it ahead, whereupon the water became perfectly smooth over a narrow space ahead of him, just where he was to pass, whilst on both sides the waves were enormous and raging. All his nephews were drowned, and all the inhabitants of that village also perished in the waves, except the mother of the baby and her husband. During this frightful storm, the young man was paddling, always on the smooth water, but he was exhausted. Nothing but water and big waves all over. Then he took a harpoon and threw it. It hit the crest of a wave. But the effort he had made to concentrate his thought while throwing the harpoon overpowered him. He fainted, his head bent down in the fore part of the canoe. Soon after, however, he recovered himself, and oh, wonder! There he was, in his canoe, in a forest of spruce trees. The land had been formed again. The harpoon had glanced on the mountaintop as the wave hardened into rock, and had struck again another huge wave, changing it into a mountain. This is the one we call Denali. The young man then turned towards the child whom he had left sitting behind his back. But she was no more a child. She was a grown-up girl, but she was quite beautiful, with a face as bright as the sun. It is from this woman that men were made anew to repeople the earth, for she had children from the young man. But the two who had been saved from the waters, as we have seen, these were the ancestors of the people beyond the seas.
The next story is called Athabascan Society, and it's narrated by Athabascan Alberta Steffen. It's about lifestyle and subsistence practices.
In this episode, we hear about the Athabascan Society.
The Indian Athabascan Society was pretty much like everyone else around. People took care of everything that maintained its survival, such as the best hunters and the chief. These people were not allowed to do the everyday chores like cutting wood and carrying water and all that. They had a job to do. Their job was to bring in the food, and the chief's job was to make decisions on how much they needed and who gets what. And when the hunters went out, they had to go a long ways, and they had to take care of the meat wherever they were. Then they had to bring them home, either packing it or by canoes. They didn't have dog teams. If they had dogs, they used them for packing. When they got home, the women and the old people at home took care of the meat. They saved things by drying it and smoking it. Then they had caches. They put them in their caches. The caches were built off the ground, way up maybe about 10, 12 feet, because then the flies and the rodents don't get at it. History was passed to the younger generation by stories. The elders that could not work anymore told the children parables. It was a story, but it meant something else, something that would tell them what was right and what was wrong. The younger children were taught to watch everything that their parents did, and they learned by hands-on experience. They took them out hunting since they were old enough, showed them how to do things. Many people right now are having a problem in school because books were not a part of our life. Books we didn't know how to use. What they learn from is to watch somebody doing it. Like if you have a math problem, you're gonna have to watch somebody do it before you could understand how it's done. A lot of these things that our people knew, you have to adapt it to the way everything's going now, adapt it to today's life. And the younger generation always improved under the way their parents lived. They improved on the houses, they improved on how to save things. Today we have a lost generation because they don't know their old ways. They don't know the way it used to be.
Welcome. You are listening to The Storyteller, a collection of stories and folktales from Alaska's original peoples. I'm your host, Shanach. Let's go. In this episode, we hear why the hunter never forgets his muckluks.
Long ago, there was a very strong hunter in the region of Kisunak, now known as the village of Chivak, and he had been hunting and hunting all day long, hunting for seals. And after a long day of hunting, he returned back to his sod house. And he crawled into his sod house, and he took his furskin boots, his bilugooks, or his mukluks, and he unstringed them and unlaced them, and he removed them from both of his feet, and he tossed them carelessly to the side of his sod house because he was so tired. And he removed his parka and he hung it. And later that night he went to bed. And in the middle of the night while he was sleeping, he was suddenly awoken by whispering noises and talking in his sod house. And he woke up afraid because he knew that he was the only one living in his sod house, and he wondered who was there. And he said, "Who's there? Who is talking in my sod house?" And the voices kept talking, and they were chatting, and they were laughing, and they were arguing, and whispering back and forth. And he didn't recognize these voices that were speaking in Chupik. So what he did was he walked over to his seal oil lamp so he could see, and he lit a match, and he lit his seal oil lamp, and he slowly began walking towards the two voices while saying, "Who's there? Who is in my sod house?" And when he moved his seal oil lamp closer to the voices, what he saw scared the hunter. He looked and he saw his two mukluks facing each other, talking back and forth and laughing. His two boots had grown mouths and they were having a conversation together. And he ran over to his mukluks and he grabbed them and he put them side by side so that they would stop talking to each other. And from that day on, that hunter knew never to carelessly throw his mukluks to the ground. He always knew that when he went into his sod house, he had to place them very carefully on the ground, side by side. And after that, the hunter's mukluks never talk to each other again. Always remember, when you walk into your sod house, or you walk into the place where you live, always carefully remove your shoes and put them away with care so that you never hear whispering in the dark of your house.
That was Yupik storyteller Polly Andrews. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts, and this is an Aleutic song from a CD called Generations, and it's available at aleuticmuseum.org. Today's show is dedicated to Alaska Native stories from the Storyteller series, distributed by Native Voice One and hosted by Janard.
In this episode, we hear the origin of the first fishnet, the origin of an Eskimo name, Mugluk.
My name is William Frost Taktu. The story that I would share with you is from the Seward Peninsula area. My Eskimo name, Mugluk, was a man who watched spiders. That's why I have a spider tattoo. This Eskimo, Mugluk, said to himself, "Why is this spider spinning a web?" So he just sat there and sat there and sat there. The next day, he said, "Oh, holy cow, a lot of flies in that web." He said, "That spider is very smart." He said, "I'm gonna copy that spider's web. So if I could be smart like the spider, I could survive," he said. This was the first net, the first fish net. So he copied the spider web. It took him all day, all night. And he said, "How am I gonna put it beneath the water?" So he goes, "I put here rock here, rock there, and put it underneath the water and put a stick between the nets and the holes." So he put it beneath the water and he came back in the morning. "Holy cow, a lot of fish. I'm real smart Eskimo. My name is Mugluk." So that's how the people survived.
The tale of the sea giant.
One day, Gingikak was walking underneath the sea He was a very tall giant. Gingigak was so tall. So he walked underneath the sea until he came to the mainland, looking for something. Looking. And he said to himself,
"What am I looking for? I live under the sea."
When I was a small boy, the last time I saw Gingigak, we were going to Wales, Alaska, for a reindeer corral. We were about 6 miles out of mainland, and there was a boat ahead of us. And this man ahead of us made a motion, pointing his finger below the water, beneath the sea. He was pointing, he said, "Be careful," because his mortar hit a rock. We passed by that big rock, and my dad said, "Oh, Gingigak, the giant who walks under the sea is walking." And I asked, "Who is Gingigak?" He says, "The giant who walks under the sea." It was the last time I saw him, because we saw a big round head. That was the last time I saw Gingigak.
Welcome. You are listening to The Storyteller, a collection of stories and folktales from Alaska's original peoples. I'm your host, Shanach. Let's go. I share with you a story from the KNBA Radio Archives.
My name is Rachel Craig. This story used to be told to us by our grandmother, Maggie Gregg, the widow ptarmigan and the owl. It was springtime in Alaska. Long, warm days and the snow slowly melting. The village people had gone to their spring camps and set snares for birds to eat fresh meat. I imagined they'd skinned some ptarmigan like our grandmother used to and stuffed and dried them. They looked very realistic, and she set them near her snares in the willow bushes. Other ptarmigan saw them and thought that they had found some sweet morsels to eat. So they landed near the willow bush where they were. Before long, Mr. Ptarmigan got caught in the snare, and Mrs. Ptarmigan was alarmed and began to cry her heart out. There was no way she could rescue her husband, and soon he died of strangulation. Widow Ptarmigan was inconsolable. She continued to cry for her loss. An owl was flying around nearby and heard her cries. He landed close to her and started talking in a singing way. A rough translation of the song is like this. Are you crying for your dead husband? The one who walks around these willows and got caught in a snare? Why don't you take me for your next husband? Well, the widow ptarmigan straightened her back, dried her tears, and fluffed her feathers, and she began to sing to the owl. And then she flew away. A rough translation goes something like this. Pray tell, who would consider you for a husband anyway? You with your big forehead and feathers that make you look like you were humpbacked. Besides, where are your legs and neck? And then she flew away. The old owl was left behind by the widow ptarmigan, royally rejected.
That was Inupiaq storyteller Rachel Craig. This is Station Studio. We're listening to the Storyteller series of Alaska Native Folklore. Our final story comes from Yupik storyteller John Active. It's about two elder women who are haunted by an unknown voice.
Once upon a time, there were these two little old ladies that lived together in a sod house at the bend of a river. And one morning, one of the little old ladies went out the door to get some fresh air. And while she was out there, she began to hear someone singing with a very scary voice. And it was coming from up the river. And it seemed to be getting louder and louder and closer and closer. And it was singing, "Ach, Jiu Jiling, Bini Luku, Bini Cha Luku, Inimum Duka, Chinika Ramka, Akhna Kauluk, Kasala Kaktuk, Kukukarim, Kpakluk, Ia, Ahuaya." The little lady got frightened. She ran into the house and told the other lady, "Come out, come out, listen, there's something coming. There's something coming from up the river. Come and listen." And so they both went out. And then again they heard the voice, "I'm building a canoe, going to make it strong, because over on the bend of the river up there are two little old ladies living, and I'm going there to eat them alive." Ooh, the little old ladies got frightened. And so they took their canoe and they put it in the water. Then they went back and rolled up a swamp where they gathered wild spinach. They rolled that all up. They didn't want to leave it behind. So they took it and they brought it down to their canoe and put it in. Then they went to their favorite dry wood gathering patch. And they rolled that all up and brought it down to the canoe and put it in the canoe. Then they didn't want to leave their favorite berry picking patch. So they went back and they rolled that all up and put it in the canoe. Finally, they took their little house and put it in the canoe and got it in the canoe and started paddling away. But then all of a sudden, the voice came and it was coming from underneath the canoe and it was singing, "Ach, jiu jili, ah, bini hi luku, bini cha luku, in mum tuka, jini ha. Ooh, they carefully pulled their paddles out of the water because the voice was coming from right underneath the canoe. They looked over the side of the canoe and there in the water they saw a needlefish. Very small, maybe half an inch long at the most. And they're full of needles, just like sticklebacks. And he was singing with his eyes closed shut. That song, that scary song. And the little old lady at the front of the canoe said, "Ook damam chuna hualinsta nakpeke goso. This is the one that was frightening us." And she took her little old ladle and dipped him out of the water. She put him on the cutting board, took her ulluak, woman's cutting knife, cut him in half. She ate the front and gave the tail to the other old lady, and they listened and no more singing, and so they went back to their little homestead and put everything back and lived happily ever after.
Storyteller is a production of Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. Funding for the Storyteller provided by the Annenberg Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Siri Foundation. To hear the story again and experience more stories, visit nativestoryteller.net. Thank you.
hope you enjoyed the Alaska Native stories from the archives of KNBA and the Anchorage Museum. The Storyteller Series is distributed by Native Voice One at nv1.org and hosted by Janar. This song is from the Generation CD of Aleutic Songs, available at aleuticmuseum.org. If you missed this show, you can hear the podcast at kbu.fm/stageandstudio. That's it for Stage and Studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.